visiting with Dr. Tom Knox. You are moving locations.
Yes, I am, Heather. As of March 1, my practice will be directly associated with the hospital at Baxter Bone and Joint Clinic.
Why did you decide to make this change, sir?
Well, I have had a very good practice here in private practice in Mountain Home, but I found that looking around our area, it is becoming increasingly difficult for hospitals to continue their current operations in the current economic climate. And last year, West Plains was forced to cut staff as well as Harrison. Mountain Home has been able to, through attrition, reduce some staff. But it became obvious that all of us in the medical profession are going to have to push together in order to make this effort work. And our hospital is extremely important to this area, not just for Mountain Home, but for surrounding counties. Many people that work here at our hospital live in Ozark County and Marion County, Izzard County, and Fulton County. So from my standpoint, my loyalty and devotion is to our hospital and to this area. And I'm wanting to make an even more direct impact on that at this time.
Well, and along with your professional career, both you and your wife, Deborah, have been champions of our community ever since the day you started here.
Well, my wife is the better angel of my nature on that.
We usually are.
She has always had the forethought to look into worthwhile things in this community to better them, including the library and other things around town that she stays in the background on, but is very important in progressive things.
You know, you both were Southern Missouri kids who grew up and chose to start. Why did you pick Mountain Home as the place you wanted to start all those years ago?
That's an interesting story. I went to medical school at the University of Missouri Columbia. Dr. Fred Turner and Dr. Peter McKercher were both there when I was a medical student. Dr. Turner was my first-year medicine instructor. And my mother became ill. I was doing my fellowship in hand surgery in 1982. And my mother became ill, and she was hospitalized at Ozark Medical Center in West Plains. And Dr. Turner and Dr. McKercher were both attending. They had a clinic in West Plains and would come up and consult on a daily basis as need be. And my mother was one of those patients. Dr. Turner and Dr. McKercher told me about this opportunity in Mountain Home that existed, that there were a number of physicians and that the medical community was really growing with first-class individuals. And I had the highest respect for Dr. Turner as a medical student. So I came down and talked to Dr. Sword, who I eventually went in with, and we practiced together for a number of years. And it was a very wise decision.
I love hearing the names of former physicians. It's like a walk down memory lane.
Yes, yes. Well,
and you've worked with them all.
I've worked with them all, and the thing that you don't that you have to appreciate is that our hospital, when I moved here, the 3 West Tower was under construction. Our operating room at that time, we had 2 operating rooms and a urology suite. The large structure you see today did not exist at all. It was the original old hospital that was constructed in the 60s with the one addition of the new tower, which was due to open later that year. But the staff was good, and the spirit of growing and wanting to provide excellent care was here from the first, and that included not just surgical, but it included the radiologists, Dr. Tullis and Dr. Dave Roberts, and Dr. Jim Clark in particular as our anesthesiologist, who provided incredible support for me during my growth, and the can-do attitude of the surgery department as well.
And you've traveled the world to continue to educate yourself and to bring the latest technology and healthcare to this area, and you plan to continue to do that for years.
Oh, yes, yes. I have been fortunate. My professor, Dr. Tom Brower, emphasized to all of us as we were in training that the residency, your residency was just a starting point in your life, and that the best surgeons were the ones that continued their continuing medical education. And I've been fortunate enough to receive medical education not just from our Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, but from Mayo Clinic on several occasions for very detailed subject matters such as elbow, shoulder, revision hip. In fact, about 1988 or 89, the thing that you don't experience nowadays in tuning total joints is that we're on what was called first-generation joints, which were the polyethylene plastic wasn't what we have today that has excellent wear characteristics. And these joints tend to loosen, and they tended to cause significant bone destruction. And I had a whole host of patients back then that had these first-generation joints, whether they were knees or particularly hips. And it was bewildering as to what you would do on these folks to try and help them. And our academy offered two courses. There were going to be, I think, 8 surgeons each, one at Mayo and the other one at Harvard, for this week-long course on revision surgery. And they wanted us to write a resume of our training and the reason why we wanted to attend this course. And so I sent them my resume and a letter that I lived in rural North Arkansas. Our nearest referral center for revision-type surgery was Little Rock or St. Louis. And they accepted me into this course, and it was one of the neatest experiences I ever had in my life, exposing me to removal of cement technique removal, the use of cadaveric bone for bone grafts to the pelvis, the use of metal augmentation rings to take the stress off of the hip implant while bone healing integrated. And on certain cases, in removing the cement out of the pelvis, you were left with this huge cavitary lesion that was sometimes 3 times as large as what you were wanting to put back in. And there's no way that you can fill that with cement. You had to go back to Mother Nature and put bone in, which we did. And remarkably, I mean, and it worked. Gradually, as time moved on, we got better implants, and the hospital has been extremely supportive in transitioning to what I feel like are the best implants available at this time, made from proprietary use of zirconium that is oxidized to ceramic. Yes, they're more expensive than a traditional cobalt chrome, but they're elemental metal. There's no allergy to them. And the FDA has allowed them to, the company that makes them, to state that they can potentially last for up to 30 years because there's so little wear. Over the years, we have used planning tools such as MRI plan knees, where we would make custom cutting blocks, which I became involved with probably 14 years ago. But that technology, while it was a real step forward, didn't answer the complete plan of why certain people would have stiff knees and their alignment still wouldn't be what you'd want. So we began exploring the use of robotic surgery. And there were companies that had robots before the current one that we have now, that relied, once again, on imaging to be done and then sent to the factory for the operative plan. I became aware of another technology probably 3 years ago, but 2 years ago in particular, as they came through another version of this, and it was called the CORI system, C-O-R-I, manufactured by Smith & Nephew. And this system allowed us to actually template the knee intraoperatively before any bone cuts have been done. And this robotic system allows us to take reference points for the center of axis of rotation of the hip, the transmission line of force coming down through the knee from the center of the hip to the center of the ankle. It then allows one to compute an operative plan including collateral ligament balance, which is how much tension there is on the inside and the outside of the knee, because ultimately that's really is what's going to determine the longevity of the implant, because you have to have certain forces need to be relatively equal so that there's not a stress coming up. I'm talking loosening that can come about 3 to 4 or 5 years out. And I've got knees that I see regularly in the clinic that I did 20 to 25 years ago. So done correctly, these joints can do very well and last a long time. But getting back to transitioning to the hospital, this technology is expensive and it requires a great deal of commitment, financial commitment of the hospital to make this work. And it was another reason why I decided that maybe it's time to fold in forces with the hospital to go forward together, because we work in a competitive environment. And the CORI system, getting back to it, is the system. So we map out the knee, and this knee then, this robotic system, allows us to determine the size of the prosthesis that we want to use. And it allows us to manipulate where that prosthesis sits within the native knee joint, whether it's in a slight amount of more varus or valgus, those are technical terms, or how much rotation we build into the joint. And it instantaneously will tell you how much stress that puts across the joint, anterior to posterior, medial to lateral, so that you can optimize your result. And only then do you go forward with what you think of the robot, which is a milling machine that mills down the surface of the bone and creates a perfectly contoured femur or tibia to put the trial components in. And the results of this, I think, are going to be fantastic. It'll also allow us to model a revision knee. So when we're doing a revision knee, one that's loosened, you have to, within the knee joint, you have to get the rotation axis very accurate. And going in on a native knee, that's relatively simple to do. But when you go in on a revision knee where there's bone loss, you sometimes can't quite get that correct. Well, if you utilizing this CORI system, it allows us to map that out, and it allows us to restore that joint line area where it should be. So these are things that I think will make us a tremendously better hospital in the coming years in terms of that. So that kind of sums up where I think the joints are. Where are we headed? Where are we headed as a hospital orthopedically? Well, there are so many younger people with sports injuries. In fact, when I moved here in 1983, Deborah and I and my son had been in Alaska. I spent my last month in a residency in Alaska. I was on a sabbatical there, taking a call and taking over practice for one of the fellows that had trained 2 years before me at Kentucky. And got off the plane in Memphis, and Deborah said, well, one of our neighbors, when we lived in Thayer, was a big rodeo fan, and he had injured his knee. So my first case when I moved to Mountain Home was an open ACL reconstruction. I had spent 2 months with Dr. Frank Noyes in Cincinnati doing a mini sports fellowship, and Dr. Noyes was one of the early advocates in the United States to realize that intra-articular anterior cruciate reconstruction was the method of choice, not extra-articular, which was the standard of care here at that time. So Dr. Sward put up with me through this case, shaking his head as we got this gentleman's knee done. And I'm happy to say that this gentleman still has his ACL intact so many years later, still functioning well for him. So that was a neat thing. And we transitioned from open ACL reconstruction to doing them arthroscopically assisted, utilizing initially patellar tendon bone, and then once again through continuing medical education, being invited to cutting-edge courses, transitioning to native hamstring tendons. And that helped resolve a lot of the perioperative rehabilitation in terms of soreness and everything. And that has been my standard of care since then, doing ACL reconstructions. There are various bells and whistles we've added to it. One of the most important things I feel like I've had a bit of an impact on here is joint preservation. I realized early on, and it was the work of a veterinarian that published in the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery. His name was Steve Arnosky, who showed unequivocally that a meniscus tear, if sutured, had a high probability of healing. And the one thing that you can see through older studies is that people that have had a total meniscectomy, unequivocally, you look at studies 20 years later, they have medial joint arthritis of their knee. And as many sports injuries as we have today, all of these meniscus injuries. So I became involved initially, and this was probably about, it's probably 87 to 88. I started doing open repairs of meniscus injuries where we would do, make a small incision. We would pass sutures from inside the joint to out, had various things to do that. And they still work very well that way, too, I'll add. And then the companies, the industry, started answering the call for using implants for that as well, so we could do it all inside. People, younger people, for just through their natural birth and their genetic history, sometimes will develop malalignment of their extremities. And this is an issue that has to my mind, we need to put more emphasis in. And that's one thing that I'm really excited about, looking forward working with the hospital, is improving our care of these people through osteotomy, that is cutting the bone and doing a realignment of that extremity to take weight off the area where early arthritis is developing. And then once that's accomplished, then if they need a cartilage transplant or a meniscus, cadaveric meniscus transfer, going ahead and doing that. The one thing we have found in the early studies with these meniscus transplants and cartilage grafts is that they work fine for a couple of years, but if you haven't done the osteotomy to correct the alignment, they fail. So we've got a whole lot of work we need to do, and it's sometimes it can be tedious, and it's something that it takes a program that I think that we've got great surgeons, orthopedic surgeons in this community, and I think we can accomplish this. And it's one thing that I definitely want to be a part of before I hang up my shingle.
I think we're a long way from hanging up those shingles, though. As excited as you still get talking about healthcare and talking about surgery, I mean, it's just as excited as you were when you started.
Well, it is. And the thing is, on these osteotomies, I attended our annual Arthroscopy Association meeting in New Orleans last year. And one of the papers was on this, was using computer-aided navigation, doing CT scans and long leg studies to precisely plan the osteotomy with custom implants in order to keep the osteotomy secure while the bone healed itself. And I thought to myself, this is one of the best things I've seen in a long time, because it really makes you, there's no guesswork. I mean, it takes a lot of the guesswork out, I should say. So I think that is something that, and I'm pushing with some of our representatives that supply materials and implants for us right now to get with their companies, because this is something that we have to have. And then associated with that, there are companies right now that we can harvest native cartilage cells of you or a patient and send them off for culture to transplant in the body. And we've done that a fair amount. And I've done that with several patients, particularly people that have patellofemoral problems. We'll do an osteotomy to realign the alignment of the kneecap, and then go in and do a focalized graft replacement, articular cartilage graft replacement. And these work really well, and they really help people and restore them to health. And the long-term results from them are absolutely excellent. And it prevents having to have an early joint replacement.
You know, one of the tales of if you're a native of Mountain Home is Tom Knox has probably done surgery on you at some point in your life. Have you ever counted up the total number of surgeries you've performed?
No, but it's thousands for sure. I think the most gratifying thing is when you see third and fourth generation family members coming in to the office to see you about things, or seeing the third generation with their grandchildren with them. You know that they're in there with them for the day. It really makes you feel good.
We've talked about the advances of healthcare. You and I, we've had so many conversations over the year, and it's always so exciting. It seems like we've spent more time talking about the economies of healthcare here, you know,
absolutely.
Here lately. And that was one of the important reasons why you decided to make this
absolutely.
Transition.
Yeah, so when we went into COVID, COVID changed so many things in healthcare. Before, as of March 1, I'll be giving up my office. But I've also been since 2007, so what is that, 17 years? 18 years, I have been an active member of Mountain Home Surgery Center and have brought, I feel like, very efficient orthopedic care of particularly things like rotator cuff injuries for management. And post-COVID, insurance payments have declined, and they've not only declined for us at that surgery center, but also for the hospital. And it's become increasingly difficult to make money or to even break even in certain cases that are done at an ambulatory surgery center. And you still have to apply care. And one thing that it made me look at what can we do? I mean, right, we're heading into a time, Heather, that's called value-based medicine. And it's a relatively new term, but Ron Peterson, in looking at the Cori robot, he had to consider that. And the board of directors, of which you're a member, had to look at that. Can we afford this? And really, what does it add to the product that we're turning out here, which is a total knee or whatever? And so as I looked at things at the surgery center and how tough it was even on the hospital, managing care and trying to get patients sufficiently cared for postoperatively, and we live in a rural area, and one thing was outpatient total joints. Well, if you live in St. Louis and you go to Barnes, chances are if you have a total knee, it's going to be outpatient. You're going to be discharged the day of surgery. Now, they have hotels that specialize in care that are directly attached to the hospital. So the care is there. We do not have that luxury here. And my practice is regional. My practice goes in any direction, probably 100 miles, particularly into southern Missouri. And so it's very difficult for me to have a patient that comes from, say, Alton, Missouri, which is 90 miles from here, to send them home the day of surgery. It scares me to death to think about that. And it scares my patients to think about that, because home health services in that part of the world are not as good as they are in downtown St. Louis. And so we have looked at our length of stay, which typically for a total hip is usually maybe one day. And for a total shoulder replacement, it's one day because we give perioperative antibiotics. And for total knees, we've got that down to largely, I would say, 2 days, where it used to be 3 to 4 days.
Didn't you used to do total knees on Friday and then you would check out on Monday afternoon?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, when we would do a knee arthroscopy, that was an impact. And people spent the night after that in the original days. But these days that these patients stay in the hospital cost money. And they cost, you know, there are many people taking care of these folks. So we have managed to really streamline that. But it's been a physician and it's been a hospital project to do that. And I feel like it's better the more I go forward with my practice that I want to be part of the entire care scheme for that in terms of hospital workup in an outpatient basis. And streamlining the therapy postoperatively to where the therapy is something that I have direct input in, of which I do at my current office. I started our therapy center there with Integrity Healthcare a few years ago. After discussing this issue, we had health therapy there before, but it wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. And so I discussed this issue with a number of people in the area that have larger practices. And one gentleman in Fayetteville that manages Ozark Orthopedics over there told me about this company in Memphis, and it was Integrity Healthcare. And they really opened my eyes in terms of what you can accomplish. And the hospital has adopted, their therapy plan is similar to that. And I'm excited to have even more input on this as we go forward on that. So
the relationship a orthopedic surgeon has with a physical therapist is crucial.
It's intimate in terms of turning out a proper product, turning out a good patient that's rehabilitated. Because surgery is one thing, but rehabilitation following that surgeon is crucial for a proper patient to return to the workplace. And one of the meetings I went to one time, one of the gentlemen that spoke was the orthopedic surgeon that takes care of the United States Naval SEAL team. And when he started talking about surgical expertise and rehabilitation, it put things on an entirely different level for me. And I listened to every word he had to say. He was a keynote speaker because here you are. You have these young men that are risking their lives performing some of the scariest military missions on this planet. And when they're injured, they have to have surgery. They have to be rehabilitated. And they have to be rehabilitated to where they can go out and perform their mission once again. And so it made me really think about, you know, what can we do here to better what we're doing? And so things like that, to me, have a direct application in what we can do here in Mountain Home in terms of care of our patients, both intraoperatively and postoperatively.
For your patients, you're in a different location, but they will still get everything, the same great service. I mean, they're not going to see any difference other than where they're going, right?
No, my patients are really some of the best people in the world. And for the last couple of months, I've been telling all of them that I'm transitioning to the hospital. And I would say 99.9% of these folks say, you know, you're our doctor. And we're going to follow you where you go because we know you will be our doctor. And I just want to tell everybody that the same individual care they get from me in terms of listening to their problem, doing an examination, and trying to come up with a formulation of care that we both agree on. I always tell my patients in terms of care that surgical care and orthopedics is a road that we both go down. It's not you and it's not me, it's we. And there's a lot of things that go on afterwards in terms of rehabilitation, and that I will continue to follow them all through that process. I think one of the analogies I make, it would be nice if we could draw a line from A to B, and that would be your care from time of surgery to the time of total rehabilitation. I said, unfortunately, there are lots of rocks in the road and there are different turns that we take, but we take those turns together. And that is the important of what I feel like is individualized care. And I know that at Baxter Bone and Joint, I'm going to be able to do that. And I'm excited about that. I really am.
When you travel and go to different conferences and speak with your peers, how do you describe the culture at Baxter Health?
I think I'm able to speak in a very positive way because the support we need, and the Cori robot is the latest example, is provided for. If I need something in surgery, as long as I can make the case for cost effectiveness and the goodness for care of the patients, I always get that. And people can't believe frequently that here we are in a town of, 15,000, something like that.
I always tell people, look at our county statistics.
Yeah,
look at our county population,
sure.
About 40,000.
Right, 40,000 that we sit between two population centers, of Springfield and Little Rock. And we have three neurosurgeons. We have, 6 orthopedic surgeons, several cardiologists, several excellent family practice clinics, urology. people frequently are amazed because they can't believe we offer such comprehensive care. And I'm telling you, the technology that is required to provide that care is significant. And once again, it implies a level of commitment that the hospital has to the delivery of that specialized care. It's to me, it's a hand-in-hand project. When I first started practice, very few people were employed by hospitals. Now, when you look nationwide, probably 70 to 80% of orthopedic surgeons are hospital employed. The reasoning: it costs a lot to run a family, to run a private practice. It's better to have utilized services across with several people and different services, so that if we need a new MRI, it's not just me that's using that MRI. It's the family doctors if they need an MRI. And it's utilized so much more so that it pays for itself. Because this technology, as I've gone over time and time again, is not cheap.
And it changes rapidly.
It changes rapidly. Mm-hmm. One neat thing I'm doing right now, I will tell you, in terms of getting back to value-based medicine, when I first started doing rotator cuff repairs years ago, we did these all open. We would open the joint, and we would take off the bone spurs by utilizing what's called an osteotome, or a chisel, if you will, and we would tap it off with a mallet, and then we'd make holes in the bone and pull the tendon back to repair it. Those rotator cuff repairs did well. They did very well. But then we were detaching a slight amount of muscle to do that, and so then came arthroscopy, which I started doing shoulder arthroscopy in 1987, which I was probably the first guy in this entire area for several years that did shoulder arthroscopy. And I've done thousands of shoulder arthroscopies. I transitioned to arthroscopic rotator cuff repair somewhere around probably 2001, so 23 years ago. As I did so, I transitioned away from doing the transosseous bone repairs. Well, the Europeans kept at this, doing the transosseous, even doing them arthroscopically, and they developed instrumentation for doing this. We in the United States, on the other hand, being industry-driven in certain aspects, were utilizing bone anchors, which are small devices that are driven into the bone, either screwed in, hammered in, that you then tie the tendon to. So the concept here is you're repairing either to a piece of bone, or if you're doing it transosseous, you're repairing it with sutures through the bone. 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I was reviewing some articles, and one was an article out of France by one of the most respected shoulder surgeons in the world, who has developed the shoulder system that we use at our hospital. The company is called Toynier. And he presented a series of rotator cuff repairs that he and his colleagues had done arthroscopically, transosseously, 20 years ago, and presented the results. These results were spectacular. They were really very, very good. So I started looking at this, and there was a company here in the United States that made instrumentation for this called Tensor Surgical. And it allowed, so I started looking at this, and our surgery center bought this system, and then I talked the hospital into purchasing this system as well. And I use it exclusively for most of my repairs. I sometimes still use anchors for unique repairs, but for most of my repairs, I'm using this Tensor Surgical. In fact, I used it just yesterday at the hospital outpatient center. This system allows me to make holes in the bone arthroscopically, pass sutures through them, and then do the repair. What's the advantage of this? Well, we can do a repair, I think, even more secure than using anchors for a fourth of the cost. And doing them on an outpatient basis where you have to watch your pennies, this makes an incredible difference in terms of whether you need new arthroscopy equipment, whether you can afford to buy it or not. And so, and it yields a better result. That is the beauty of this. So this is one thing that, from my standpoint, has been a really exciting point in the development of shoulder arthroscopy that I think has a direct impact and will in the future. And when I first started doing this and I would go to one of my shoulder arthroscopy meetings, there were no papers presented. Now, I think this year at the Arthroscopy Association of North America meeting, I bet there's going to be 6 or 7 papers on transosseous repair. The Europeans have had articles on this for the last 8 to 10 years, and it's taking hold in America. And it's not taking hold just because it's different, but it's better. I think it's better than in a lot of, because there's no anchors to loosen. You're tying directly through the bone.
What's the next thing? What's the next big thing that you're excited to, like, if you could research and study and learn and bring to Mountain Home, what is it?
It's going to be limb realignment, which we alluded to earlier, limb realignment in younger individuals. We have so many young people that play sports now. So many people that come into the office with meniscus injuries or ACL injuries.
Define young.
Well, I'm talking like even to young adult, say 20, 25. Uh-huh. But, and sometimes these injuries are debilitating. You take somebody that, if they've had a meniscectomy versus a meniscus repair, and let's say they had that injury at age, let's just say age 20, they had a medial meniscectomy and an ACL injury. I can guarantee you at age 35, if you take an X-ray of their knee, they're going to show arthritis signs. They are going to show arthritic signs. I mean, you know, what are the options? Well, would you want to do a total knee on somebody that age? You do not want to do that because the chances of them needing at least one revision are 100%. The chances of them needing two revisions are probably 50 to 60%. And each time, remember I was talking about the bone loss associated with each time you do this, goes up. So by doing this limb realignment where you're making cuts in the bone, realigning that extremity to take the weight off of the arthritic surface and then rebuilding that arthritic surface, to me holds great promise. And it is a subject that is becoming increasingly talked about in America. Our academy offers courses, I don't know if it's on an annual basis, but on a biannual basis. On this subject, I have been to 2 or 3 of these courses, and they actively talk about osteotomy, meniscus cartilage transplants. I have sent several people from this area to Chicago to have major cartilage transfers where they're using cadaver bone to do in-block transfer of degenerative joints because of sports injuries that occurred when people were in college, high school and college. So to me, that's one of the bigger things that's going to occur. The robotic use of doing joints is going to be a huge, it's going to make a huge impact, I think, on the outcome of joint replacement surgery as we become more familiar with it in this area.
What would you tell patients who are a little leery of, what do you mean a robot's going to perform surgery on me? I want Dr. Knox performing surgery.
What outcomes can a patient expect? So the robot is a tool. It's just like a mechanic. You know, when you go to work on a car, you want to walk into a shop and you want to see the big snap-on chest. You want to see the biggest tool chest. And in fact, when I did this course on revision hip surgery at the Mayo Clinic, the leading surgeon in the world on doing revision surgery, he was laughingly, he said, you know, gentlemen, he said, I want to say this, you can do it, but you have to have a large tool chest to get it accomplished. And so the robot is a tool. It is a tool that enables us as surgeons to more accurately get the limb alignment as perfect as possible and to reproduce it with algorithms within the computer, once again, as I said, before we've even made a bone cut, so that we have this operative plan worked out to where it will be optimal for the patient. And then it allows us to accurately do that surgery on the patient in terms of the technique of closure and wound closure. That is still the surgeon doing all of that. It's just a tool that we have that makes our job a little easier and hopefully improves the patient outcome and the longevity of that joint.
Do they see a difference in recovery time?
I can't say that. Mm-hmm. I can't say that. I think our recovery times, by and large, are pretty good. But I can't really comment on whether it will result in a shorter recovery time because I don't think it'll have that much of an impact there.
Mm-hmm. You're a couple of weeks away from having your first day of work.
I am.
It's been a while since you had a first day of work.
This is true. This is true. I'm excited. Sir, I want to tell everybody in the listening area, everything about my practice is staying the same. My clinic days are going to be the same. I have an extensive commitment to people from Southern Missouri. I grew up, Deborah and I both grew up in Thayer, Missouri. We're both graduates of Thayer High School. I went to college and medical school at the University of Missouri, Columbia. So I still will have my outpatient clinics in West Plains on a weekly basis. I will still be taking care of patients there. And in fact, in working out the details of my employment, I stress that to Mr. Ron Peterson, who, after looking at things, he said, you know, I want you to continue exactly what you're doing because it makes perfect sense and it supports the people that have supported you and us over the years. And so that to me was one of the most enlightening and pleasurable things about negotiating about what I was going to do. Because I didn't really want to change that aspect of my life because my drive up to West Plains is a time when I can reflect and think about things and think about various things that I want to do professionally and enjoy the clinic up there as well.
So, March 1st, Dr. Tom Knox at the Baxter Health Bone and Joint Clinic.
Yes. I'll see you there.
Hopefully you won't see me there.